You got to get them done, guys. Okay, there. Because now it's going to interfere with the exam study. But okay, so let's go back over then what this exam will cover. So, as I recall, the previous exam covered the link layer up to a certain point, but not entirely. And the part that I recall it not covering was link layer switching, learning associated with link layer switches, spanning tree, and the idea of switches versus routers. Okay, that's what I remember. So, you know, the kind of thing for link layer switching, given a set of nodes spread around on ports with different MAC addresses, what goes in the forwarding table of the switch, based on where the hosts are connected to the switch, and what packets get forwarded where. Okay? I don't think we did that on the previous exam. We did that on the previous exam? Okay. Well, then it doesn't have to be on this one. We stopped at PPP. Oh, okay. And I'm not going to have an exam. I'm not going to do anything on PPP on the exam. So write that off. We'll write off the link layer. Okay. That's right. Vic did the PPP during the exam review on Monday when I wasn't here. Okay. And we'd covered everything else. Okay, good. All right. So shows you what I know. So then where we'll start is with wireless. And there's a lot of stuff in the wireless chapter, so I want to sort of be very specific about what the things are that I want to put on the exam. So the main things here, the high points of this chapter, are the issues in doing wireless compared with wired networks. Okay? Things like bandwidth, interference, hidden terminal problems. What is the hidden terminal problem all about? Why do wireless networks prefer collision avoidance to collision detection? Okay, and so what is the difference between those two? And how is mobility implemented between networks? So the ideas of home agents and foreign agents and how they play in the process of allowing people to walk around the different networks with their laptops. Okay, so that's the wireless space. Then the next chapter was multimedia. The important things here, again, there's a lot of detail that we never really covered, taking a very high level picture of this. So classifications of kinds of different multimedia, live and stored streaming and interactive multimedia. Now, what are the characteristics of those kinds of traffic when we put those words to them? Overcoming the limits of best effort services, like you find in the net, in the internet. What is INTSERV and DIFSERV? Okay, those are the approach. What are the approaches taken in those different standards? We talked specifically about using playback delay to overcome jitter. Remember that? And figuring out what a good playback delay is adaptively. We covered that. We talked a little bit about error correction and minimization strategies, things like the interleaving of chunks into packets and stuff like that. And then finally, we wrapped up this chapter talking about packet scheduling and policing. So we talked about FIFO, we talked about priorities, we talked about token buckets, and that kind of stuff. So the theme that developed as I wrote these notes is that in this material, at the level that we've covered it, there actually isn't any programming content and there isn't any math content to speak of. Okay? So this exam is going to be a much more conceptual exam or concept-driven exam than the previous ones. So you can expect multiple choice sorts of questions, short answers, maybe some longer answers, explain. An obvious one is why does example of a slightly longer essay. Why do wireless networks prefer to use collision avoidance to collision detection? Okay? And I would expect you to be able to develop that in some detail, right, if that were a longer essay question. What is collision avoidance? What is collision detection? Why doesn't collision detection work so well in wireless networks? Okay? So that's what I'm thinking of as the kind of test this will be. Okay, the last chapter that we've then looked at is security. And again, concepts here, symmetric and public key cryptography, differences between them, what is each of them, how is public key cryptography used for privacy, how is it used for message integrity, what are hashed message authentication codes, how do they work, what are session keys, why do we use them, okay? So it's pretty much a concept-driven exam this time rather than programming or math. Yes, William?
What section of Chapter 8 is this one?
It goes up to what we covered through Monday. All right, so any questions about this? Questions about the material? No? Overwhelmed at this stage of the semester? Yeah. Okay. Anything else about the exam? So I'll be around this afternoon if you have questions about this that come up. I'll be around, I think I'm here without too much in the way of interruptions in my office all day tomorrow as well. Friday is not going to be a good day. For questions about the project for me. I mean, you'll have the exam in the morning, but if you're still working on the projects, there may be questions, but I'm going to be kind of tied up all afternoon on Friday until office hours at 4 o'clock. Vic may be around to help, then send him an email. But Friday, I'm pretty inaccessible after class. Okay, I'll just mention it now. I haven't got any links established yet, but the course evaluation survey is available now. Go to your MyWSU account, and it should lead you there. I don't have a MyWSU account that leads me to any surveys in the form that you see it, so I don't know exactly what it looks like. I will post a direct link sometime here in the next couple days. That'll take you from the class webpage. But these are important. The course evaluations are important. They do influence, they influence faculty members' evaluations, okay? So they get looked at in that context. And then I use them myself to think about what's working and what's not in the way that the classes are done. And so, one thing that happened last year, it was pretty apparent to the TA and me both that the book we used in this class last year was not very good, and the course evaluations confirmed that. Okay, so we were pretty confident we were going to change anyway, but it was nice to have the confirmation from the students as well that the book needed to be changed, and we did. The kind of thing that happens. So please do those for not just for this class, but for all your classes. It's important to the instructors, and it's important to the school and to future students who have to take this class or who do take this class. Nobody has to take this class. All right. So we're going to go on and find... the remaining material for Chapter 8. where were we last time? We had talked about... Okay, so this digital signatures is sort of the end of what's going to be on the exam, right? That's the point. Oh, the other thing is, please, if I don't have the slides for Chapters 7 and 8 posted by, say, this evening... somebody needs to complain to me. Somebody should have complained long ago, but these should be posted, and they're not. So somebody complain. I will try to remember to get it done, but if I don't, complaint is definitely allowed. Okay, so we've talked about digital signatures. We have this mathematical approach to using encryption, using the sender's private key, and decryption using the sender's public key to establish that the sender was the person who sent the message. Okay. But let's think about that now. Does it really say that it was that person who sent the message? What does it really say? Somebody who had that private key. Yes, this is exactly right. It really says somebody who owned the private key or had access to the private key corresponding to that public key was the person who sent the message. And the problem is, how do we bind the public key to a particular individual, right? I could go and post a notice on the bulletin board that said something or other, some long string of digits was Chad's public key, and then go around signing things using a private key that I made up that corresponded to that public key. And maybe people would believe that it was Chad who was sending those messages. Okay? So the mathematics here is fine, but the sort of embedding of the mathematics in the social and technological system is yet another problem that has to be dealt with. So here's an example. Basically saying the same thing that I just said. Okay, so to overcome this, or to address this, I think is the better word. It's not clear that it's overcome. Various designs have been done for what is called public key infrastructure, PKI. Public key infrastructure, and it's the social and business and procedural operations that are needed to attach public key information to people and entities in the real world. And there are a couple of different approaches to doing this. The one that we'll talk most about is what's called certification authorities. And the idea here is that you have to set up your public key and the association between it and yourself. You have to say to somebody, I want this to be my public key, and here's who I am. Okay? So this person, say, this entity, has to provide to the certification authority some proof of its identity along with the public key that it wants to use. And that proof of identity would be the usual sorts of suspects. Driver's license, passport, business registration information, lots of different possibilities there. And the key thing about it is that the strength of that binding, the strength of the knowledge about how good that binding is between the public key and the entity, depends critically on the CA's standards for making that binding, right? So some CAs will let you say, you know, this is my email address, and I want you to make a public key for me. Okay? Well, that email address is only weakly associated with a person in the real world, perhaps. Perhaps not. I mean, perhaps it's really strongly associated. But the entities that do certification need to have standards about what they will accept. And those standards have to be sort of promulgated out into the world so that people who rely on that information know exactly what it is they're relying on. So, what does the CA do? It creates a so-called certificate that says this entity, in whatever form we want to name it, a business, a website, a person, has this public key. Public key corresponds to that entity. And then the CA takes that certificate and signs it with its own private key. Okay? Well, what have we done? We've sort of just pushed off the problem to the same problem to another layer. Because how do we know now that the CA is that the private key that was used to sign this really belongs to the certification authority? Okay? So it's just the same problem. Except that we sort of reduce the problem because now we have to only solve it for maybe a few hundred or thousand certification authorities instead of a few billion people and businesses. So what happens is often that these CA public keys get published as part of, say, browser distributions. So Firefox knows about a lot of these. Internet Explorer does as well. You might ask yourself, is the channel on which you get your browser delivered a secure channel, and can you trust the list of certification authority public keys that you get as part of your browser? That would be a cool attack, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it indeed? The other way that these certificates get passed around The other way that these certificates get passed around or get known by browsers is that you may visit a page and it will say there's a certificate associated with this page and there is no certification authority associated with it. And then you're asked, should I accept that certificate anyway? You've seen these, right? Especially around WSU because we haven't spent the money to get real certificates. We tend to generate our own. And so then you're faced with, you've got to consider, I've gone to this place and I've got a page and it's saying it's got a certificate, but the certificate isn't signed by anybody that the browser knows. Should I accept it anyway? Okay. And, usually when you're dealing with WSU, that's not such a big problem. If you ever go to a banking site, right, or a broker, or somebody who deals with real money, or the government who wants to deal with your taxes or anything like that, stay far away, right, if that ever happens. Call them up and say, you guys, I'm getting this thing that says the certificate is no good, and I'm not going to do business with you unless you fix that. Or you're being attacked, right? Somebody's trying to masquerade as you, and you should do something about that too. Okay. Small banks around the Palouse have a problem with this, in my experience. They can't keep their certificate situation straight all the time. But so we call them up and say, can't do business under these circumstances. Okay, so that's the sort of heavyweight certification authority approach to all this. There's another approach which is not discussed here in the slides that I'll just mention. Let's do it this way. So we've talked about PKI and certification authorities. Another approach is the so-called web of trust. And the example here is PGP, which stands for Pretty Good Privacy. All right? So the idea in Web of Trust is rather than having some sort of centralized authority that does the binding between public keys and individuals, we instead have a whole bunch of people that are using public keys, and people attest to the public key bindings of other people. Right? So you sort of get a referral or a reputation sort of system where You know, maybe I believe in somebody's public key because a lot of other people have told me, a lot of other people who I trust have told me that that's the public key for that person. Okay, so that's the web of trust. And so I haven't heard about this happening very much recently, but at one time there was a sort of social activity going on where people would organize signing parties, where you would walk in with your public key, and other people who were there who you might know would say, yes, that's, you know, you would say, this is my key, and they'd say yes, and then they'd sign it with their key. And so you'd build up this database of signed keys for people that you knew and that other people who you knew, and so on and so forth. It's pretty weak, actually. It's not clear to me that it can't be sort of seriously exploited do bad things by people who are not paying attention, right? If somebody says, I've got my key signed by a whole bunch of people, and you don't know any of those people, then you probably should ignore that fact that he says it's ignored by a lot of people, but you have to be paying attention when that's going on. But PGP is a product. There's a compatible open source product called GPG. So this is pretty good privacy, and this stands for GNU Privacy Guard. It uses the same protocols. You can get plugins for your browsers and email clients to use this stuff and have fun with it, you know, at some point. If it's important to have secure and signed communication with people that you talk to, then get one of these things and install it in your mail client in particular. There was one other thought about this. Yes. So, Web of Trust, it has sort of inherent weakness, but a certain sort of democratic feel to it that is appealing. The CA model is not without its vulnerabilities. At one time, a few years ago, one CA was convinced to sign keys purporting to be for Microsoft, but they weren't. Okay, so somebody said, you know, I have these public keys and I want them signed as belonging to Microsoft. Nobody knows who it actually was who did this. I'm not even sure how it was discovered that it happened. But in fact, those keys never actually got used by anybody. So somebody got sort of halfway through an attack and either got scared or had no intention and just wanted to make a point. Or, you know, hard to say what the motivation was. But the CA was fooled. Okay? So anybody who down the road got one of those keys could be in trouble. But it does point out the the other aspect of CA-ness. Yeah.
And the even worse one last year's DEF CON, where the guy got a certificate, a signed certificate from a CA that he injected a null character into. So we had star null character dot his domain dot com. And most browser implementations saw the star and just accepted it.
Okay. Okay, so he got a certificate for star null. Star, let's do it this way. And then his dot, his domain dot, yeah, say. Okay, so the sort of official meaning of this binding is that it's good for anything, for any site whose name is anything ending with a null character and then dot hisdomain.com. Okay? But if the browser implementation is not paying attention to what's going on here, what'll it do? It'll use the C standard string ending and say, oh, this is a certificate that's good for anything, for any old site at all. Okay, so again, it just points out how the mathematics can be sort of completely solid and still the systems can be broken. So very tricky stuff. Okay, so this raises one other point. So you find you made a mistake, you find out that you, the CA, really don't want to be attesting to the identity of this guy who turns out to be, doing organized crime or something, and you just prefer not to be associated with that, or maybe somebody comes to you and says, certificate authority, I was using this public key, private key pair, and something happened, and my private key got stolen, right? I don't want it to be valid anymore. Okay, this leads to the idea of a revocation list. So the CA will publish, the CAs do publish, these lists called revocation lists that say, those certificates that I issued before, ignore them, okay? They're no longer good, shouldn't be considered valid. But notice that Get a picture here. So we have a CA. You give it a public key and an entity, and it produces a certificate. Once that certificate is signed by the CA, it can just float around in the world as a bit of data, right? I can give it to anybody. It's got nothing private in it. I can give it to anybody. I can pass it around. I can share it with anybody. It doesn't gain or lose any power in being passed around. That's very nice. If I want to get one of these things for my website, and I have my customers come to my website, well, I give them the certificate, right? That's nice. It's signed by this well-known certificate authority. They believe it. They believe it's good. And that's all very easy. But think about the revocation lists. Whose responsibility is it to check the revocation list? Every user agent has to check the revocation list. And probably should do so, depending on what you're doing, it should probably do so for every transaction. Should ask the certificate authority, is there a new revocation list? And is this certificate that I'm currently looking at on it? I think that's a lot of traffic. And they typically don't ask that often. Right? But if you're doing something super critical, and you have, or you have suspicions about the site that you're visiting, it would be good to force your browser to update its revocation list, understanding for the CAs, and check. Okay. Okay. Well, I think that's all I want to do today. Just keep in mind, you know, this cryptography stuff is really neat mathematically, but it's all got to be built into systems, and ugly stuff starts showing up when you do that. Okay, good. So we'll see you Friday.